Simon can follow that. I'm reading from the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation is a sadly misunderstood book, in my humble opinion. It's a beautiful poem of hope, is what it is. And before the author gets kind of wonky, going into the style of writing that is apocalyptic, he writes, or she, whoever's writing, writes to each of seven churches, to the angel of that church. And to each of the seven churches, the author says, you know, there's good news and there's bad news. Here's what you're doing really well. Here, not so much. And please fix that. And here's a promise. So I'm going to read just three or four of those. There are seven of them. I'm not going to read them all. Starting in chapter 2, if you're following me. To the angel of the church in Ephesus write, these are the words of the one who holds the seven stars, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works. I know your toil. I know your patient endurance. I know that you cannot tolerate evildoers. You have tested those who claim to be apostles but are not. I also know that you are enduring patiently and bearing up for the sake of my name, and that you have not grown weary. But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember then from what you have fallen, and repent and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place. Let anyone who has an ear to hear listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches. To everyone who conquers, I will give permission to eat from the tree of life that is in the paradise of God. And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these are the words of the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. I know your affliction and your poverty. Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Beware. The devil is about to throw some of you into prison so that you may be tested. Let anyone who has an ear listen to what the Spirit is saying to the churches. Whoever conquers will not be harmed by the second death. And to the angel of the church in Sardis write, these are the words of the one who has seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know your works. You have a name for being alive, but you are dead. Wake up. Strengthen what remains and is on the point of death, for I have not found your works perfect in the sight of God. Remember then what you received and heard and obeyed. And if you do not wake up, I will come, and you will not know at what hour I will come to you. Yet you have still a few persons who have not soiled their clothes, who will walk with me dressed in white, for they are worthy. And if you conquer, you will be clothed like them in white robes, and I will not bother your name, and so on. Seven of those just like that. So the United Church, Whitehorse United Church, turns 65 this fall. So happy birthday, church. I myself turned 65 this year. And I found it to be a funny kind of a birthday. 65, at least I found it that way. It seems significant somehow. It's not like turning 64. By anyone's standards now, I'm a senior citizen. It used to be that I'd go to the counter and they'd say, do you get the senior's discount? And I'd say, well, what do you mean by a senior? And now by anyone's standards, I'm old. So Whitehorse United Church is 65, and it makes you think about the future. Are we old? Are we a bit arthritic? Is it a decline from here? Churches are different than people. live their lives in cycles. There's often a big surge of energy at the beginning when something is founded, founders who have visions, and so there's a big surge of energy. And then an organization kind of settles into a regular way of operating, sort of working out the kinks and then going along, living out their vision. And then it begins to decline. And there's a certain point at which either it can continue to decline or there's a momentum at the bottom of the circle, a new vision that propels it up again. That is to say, there is nothing inevitable about the death of an institution. What do you think? Signs of decline include excessive preoccupation with who's in and who's out, focus on keeping the place running instead of focus on the goals, the vision, forgetting the goals and inability to articulate them, and nostalgia for the good old days. And much of this is up to us. And all of it is up to God. Here's some simple reflection from my limited point of view of where we've been and where we might be headed. And I chose to read from Revelation, which is, as I said, a sadly misunderstood, glorious poem of hope. In the first chapters, the author writes to each of seven churches, to the angels of those churches, and says, this is great, this is not good, fix that, and so on. Of all the things that I could say on the 65th birthday of our congregation, I'm going to offer what may be a tool for your own discernment as we move forward, and for our communal discernment as well. I want you to consider the angel of this place. The soul, the angel, not only of Whitehorse United Church, but of Whitehorse as a community. I find that idea compelling, that places have souls, have angels. Churches and cities have angels. Alice Mann, in the course I attended earlier this month, says that the task of a church is to befriend the soul, to befriend the angel of the place where you live. So just come with me as we explore that, see where the Spirit takes us. As people of faith, people who are aware that we are made in the image of our Creator, that we're part of a creation that is glorious and precious, and we're only a part of that. We're part of a huge universe, and we're also grounded in particular places. In our case, we are rooted and grounded here in Whitehorse. And part of our call to be faithful, to be people of integrity and compassion, is to befriend the soul, embrace the angel of the place where we live. Is that kind of ring for you? Anyway, the first thing to ask as we contemplate the soul of Whitehorse United Church, then, is to contemplate the soul, the angel of Whitehorse itself. And to begin to do that, here's a question. What was going on in the soul of this place, Whitehorse? What was the angel of Whitehorse up to when Whitehorse United Church came into being 65 years ago? What was going on in the soul of this city then, 1954? I would love to have this conversation widely with you. For now, I'm going to say how I see it, and you can take that for what it's worth. I've only been here 10 years. First, it was post-war. There was a spirit of optimism, a sense of a return to normal life after the war. There was a heavy stress on family life, which meant at that time a mom and dad, 2.5 kids, where the dad went to work and the mom stayed home and frilly ate and baked cookies. Right? That was a complete fantasy, of course, because almost no family was really like that. It was created by Disney and Father Knows Best. And beneath the fantasy life, family violence, people so broken by war that they'd never be the same, deep racism, and so on. But that was the mentality. People still harken back to that time as good old days. Completely created by Hollywood, they would say traditional values. No one thought to ask, whose tradition? The social discourse was one of progress and growth. People just wanted things to be nice, no more war. There were lots of community organizations, service clubs, kids programs, people volunteered for those things. There's an expectation that you would be a volunteer in your community. There was an explosion of babies. They're called big baby boomers. The biggest, healthiest crop of kids ever born to and lived in the history of the world, and that cannot be underestimated. They changed everything. And they, that's we, I'm one of them, have been, by virtue of our sheer numbers at the time we were born, we've been changing everything ever since. When we were little, for example, schools were built in unprecedented numbers. Lots of teachers were needed. When we were teens, the record industry exploded. Rock and roll, right? Business catered to us. There were lots of people had moved to Whitehorse as teachers, because you needed a lot. Medical professionals, government workers, they had too had lots of kids. They came from elsewhere with, I think, a spirit of adventure and a spirit of service. They had been members of the United Church of Canada, where they came from, many of them. And when they got here, there was no United Church, and so they worshipped for a while. Where? Gordon, where? Okay. Was it above a bank? Was there something? Okay, anyway. Worshipped elsewhere for a while. And then they said, well, we have no church building, so let's build one. Actually, Burton says that it was Mrs. Simpson who said let's build it, and apparently he did not mess with Mrs. Simpson. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that the impulse then behind the building of this church was, we need a church that we're familiar with for us and our kids, to ground us and feed us so that we can do the work of God in our jobs and families and communities. I don't think they would have said it that way, but I think that was it. It wasn't, let's build a church to evangelize the North. There's a whole set of issues that comes with that one, too. But it wasn't that. It was not, let's build a church to bring a liberal social gospel message to the territory, although that's partly the result. It's not, let's create a space for engagement with First Nations. It was more like, let's build this because we want familiarity and we want this for our own needs. I'm not criticizing that. I'm just naming it. I would have done the same thing. It's completely understandable. Many who came were professionals who lived out their faith by what they did in their jobs and other activities. They volunteered. The ministry of being part of a community in all the ways you did back then. And church was for feeding the soul so that they could go back out and do what they did. But in contemplating the soul of this place, this church, part of it is that its roots are in doing what we need for ourselves. Not closed to whoever wants to come in, quite the opposite. Newcomers would find a welcome. But there's no history of going out into the highways and byways and saying, come on, come to our church. Back then, the assumption was if you build it, they will come. And they did. Because in the 50s, you didn't have to convince people to go to church. I don't know if you agree with this. This is my take. Open for conversation. Not now. But I'm saying that there is no lingering spirit of evangelistic zeal here. Our angel is not an evangelist. So what about now? Here are some of the things that have changed since 1954. You've heard me say this over and over, but I don't think any of us realizes how much it changes everything. The boomers are getting old. the biggest bump in the demographic. It's artificial. It's not normal, this bump. And we're getting old, and you can tell. You can tell in lots of ways. Just for example, there are ads on television now for adult diapers and Viagra and Boost. You would never see that even 20 years ago. Why? Because we're the ones with the money, and we're the ones. It's all pitching. One last time to the boomers whose biggest concerns are the concerns that go with aging. And coming behind them, there are generations with quite different values and lifestyles. There was a book written 20 years ago now by a sociologist in the States. It's called Bowling Alone. The premise is this, that in, say, my parents' day, people would join bowling teams. There would be bowling leagues, and you'd bowl, say, every Tuesday night, and you had a team, and you'd bowl with them, and you'd join up for a tournament and spend the weekend and so on. And he's saying, people, that generation of joiners is gone. People are not joiners now. They're not going to join a bowling league. They'll go bowling on a Friday night if they come home from work and feel like it. And they'll phone some friends or maybe go by themselves. But nobody is going to join a league. And he says to all, to churches and to service clubs, Rotary, Elks, whatever, if you're expecting people to join in the way that they used to, get that out of your head, because they're not. So there you have it. Is it that people used to be religious and now they're not? I don't think so. Partly back then there was nothing else to do, frankly. Partly it was expected that you would go to church. My very first church was in New Richmond, Quebec, and the people that I used to hang out with, do you know what the UCW is? Okay. So I used to hang out with them, and they were all in their 60s at that time, as women. And they told me, they all grew up there. And they used to go to church twice on Sundays because their parents would let them come into town. They're all on the farms, on the ranges. They'd let them come into town, especially the evening service, because guys went there. They went to meet guys. So, it was a social place. And people from the farms who spent their whole days by themselves would come in, and it was a treat to come to a meeting and plan a church supper or something. So it's not that people used to be religious and no longer are. It used to be that churches didn't have to go looking for people because they came to us. They just did. Now, not so much. Again, for example, before I moved here, I was in Canterbury, New Brunswick, population 300. People would drive through that village to go to an area of lakes, Skiff Lake it's called, it's if anyone knows that. People had cottages there. Increasingly, boomers are retiring, winterizing their cabins, and living at the lake. There's a whole population of people out there. And I said to them, let's go out there. Let's go out there and talk to them and say, and they said, they have to drive right past our church, they know we're here. Right? So it's an attitude of, we're here, people will come to us. It used to be, and can I just say, when I say it used to be, I mean in the 50s and early 60s, because there's no flat history. Like, get that out of your head if you think church history was all like this and then just recently it's changed. Church history has gone like this forever. So when I say it used to be, I'm talking about when my parents, when I was a kid and when my parents were young. It used to be that there were large Sunday schools to accommodate post-war kids. Now, fewer kids, more for them to do. Parents are very engaged in their children's lives, unlike when I was a kid. My mom would never have sat at a kitchen table and done my homework with me. It wouldn't happen. Nor would she drive me to whatever I wanted to participate in. I was just sort of on my own. Now, parents spend time choosing what their kids will participate in, participating with them, choosing what they think will be good for the kids. And often, Sunday school programs are not it. In some churches where I've served, one in particular, which I'll go on named because I think this is being recorded, we used to have service Sunday school during the week, and teachers would come in just before the kids arrived, write them through a coloring book, run off some coloring pages, and that's it. In many churches, Christian education programs are sort of thrown together by volunteers who are doing it out of guilt. There's no passion for it, no expectation of excellence. And so parents, wanting the best for their children, take the places they think will equip them for their life. And often this is not it. Parents themselves are leading different lives. Often families are blended. Kids from one relationship, kids from another relationship, are kids together. That means, among other things, there are two exes to deal with. And dad time and mom time, that's hard. Four sets of grandparents with whom to maintain relationship. It's not that they don't care. Often parents are feeling overwhelmed. And then, when they do come and bring their kids to us, what do? We expect them to teach Sunday school. In society, the church has become suspect, and often for good reason. About 20 years ago now, the United Church of Canada did a piece of research. Partly, what they did is they went downtown in cities. You know, the reporter on the street stopping people and saying, do you go to church? And overwhelmingly, the answer was no. They asked, what words come to mind when I say church? The most common words were judgmental and rigid. They were asked, if you would go to a church, what kind of church would attract you? They said, one that accepts people, that is joyful, that reaches out genuinely to help people with no strings attached, and one that is not stuck in doctrine and dogma. The next question was, have you ever heard of the United Church of Canada? The answer was no. No. The ideal church they were describing was us. I know we're not perfect, I know that. But we're strong in the ways that they said they wanted. They never heard of us. Why? And so all of this is playing into the current angel of White Horse as a city. In spite of the aging boomers, there's a large section of younger people here. They are concerned about the environment, climate change, that changes everything, or should. They're concerned about jobs, because gone are the days when you could go to university, get a job in your field, buy a house, work at the same job, retire, get a gold watch, and sit by the lake. It's gone. It's gone. The angel of this place is worried about the future, is more aware than ever about diversity in our city, ethnic diversity, sexual diversity. She has her antenna up and wanting reconciliation with Indigenous folk, social justice leading. We are perfectly suited for the soul of this city. I think the United Church of Canada and White Horse United Church more specifically has a soul and an angel that is non-judgmental, non-doctrinal, social justice leading. We have a theology that is intellectually rigorous. We value the questions more than the answers. Our founding mothers and fathers in 1925 wrote a statement of belief and said, we know, this is just what we know right now, and what we believe, this is our best shot at. We know that in the future you're going to have to rewrite that because God continues to reveal. God continues to teach. And so three times since then, that's a short history, three times since then, we've rewritten in response to what the Spirit is up to in the world. And we don't ask you to sign on any dotted line, to give intellectual assent to any particular doctrine. When you join formally, we say, do you believe in God? Do you want to follow Jesus? then come on in and we'll figure out what that means together. I think the angel of White Horse, if she knew all this, would be doing a little angel happy dance. But she doesn't know we exist. And we haven't grasped that we need to, at the very least, let people know we're here and what we stand for. We're not good at that. When kids stop coming to church, a typical United Church all over the place, not just a typical United Church response is to sit back and say, where have all the kids gone? Evangelistic churches respond by hiring two youth pastors and buying us to go around and pick them up. In Canadian society in general, and in White Horse in particular, there are some things about the angel at this place. Baby boomers, now retired or close to it, are dealing with questions like, who am I? Now that I'm not the doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever work we let define, how will I spend this last part of my life? What is life about anyway? Because you can really only sit and let the river fall. They're asking themselves questions about dying, how to die honorably and well. The whole discussion about medical assistance and his dying, it would never have happened had the boomers not been aging. We've had our way all our lives, and now we want to sign your deaths. Younger people are terrified about climate change, and they're cynical about authority, and they ask themselves what is real, who can we trust? There's increasing loneliness, addictions are rampant, and not just among the disadvantaged. On the other hand, there's an increasing understanding about and acceptance of diversity in ethnicity and sexuality. The calls to action from the TRC are in some areas being taken seriously. And so the way we understand ourselves as a country and as a territory and city are changing for the better. So if the author of the book of Revelation were writing to the angel of White Horse United Church, I think that the author would say, you are so good at so many things, but I have this to say, you need to reach out now. Let people know you're here. There are people coming in from other countries who have strong Christian traditions and backgrounds. Strong. They come here, they're looking for a church, they don't recognize the name United Church of Canada because it's unique to Canada. And none of us has reached out to them. It's not in our DNA to do that. But I think we have to give our heads a little shake. And maybe bust out of our shyness. Or whatever that is. And the truth is that no matter what we do or don't do, in 10 to 15 years, the church as we know it will be. Well, look around. Be very different. And we need to make good, solid, faithful decisions about what we're going to do about this building and this property. And I pray that we'll make those decisions wisely, that we'll not be surprised by the changes that are coming, not make a decision out of desperation or a reaction, but as God's people have always done, trust God for the future, whatever it may be. Whatever it may be, it won't look like this. It just won't. We can't afford to be blocked by nostalgia or fear or sticking our heads in the sand. I'm going to offer you just one thing that I think is partly blocking us. Here's the thing, two things. When I lie awake at night, here's what I say to myself. God is awesome. God is awesome. The church is the place where we hear about Jesus, who just did this and taught us that God loves the whole world and called us to lives of reconciliation for the whole, the unity. Who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want to hear that they're loved beyond imagining, that they're forgiven, that you don't have to be bound by your past? Who wouldn't want to hear that? And who where people will look into your eyes and speak the name of God. Who wouldn't want that? Well, lots of people, apparently. Why? Why? The gospel is... it's the gospel. So they just haven't heard it. Why? Because the people whose job it is to proclaim it haven't done it right. And whose job would that be? That would be me. So I lie awake at night, I do, and say, if I had been a better preacher, if I had been a better pastor, maybe this wouldn't be happening. So, and I know that when I wake up in the morning, I could say all kinds of things to myself, but I'm telling you that that is real. And I also think, you can tell me I don't have kids, but I think that people who are my age and are kind of old, the boomers, are saying to themselves, I went to this church all my life, I brought my kids here. They went to Sunday school, I taught Sunday school, I served on the board, not one of my kids goes to church. What did I do wrong? And why I did that whole long thing ahead of me, I'm trying to say that it's not you. Right? There are forces in society that are leading us to this, but I know that that guilt is real. And I think unless we name it and lament, that's going to just keep blocking us from moving forward where we're going. So this is honest, this is my conclusion. So this is what I think. This city, in its soul, needs the United Church. The United Church is perfectly suited to befriend the soul of this city in ways that I've tried to articulate. Into the future, whatever it holds, we carry with us the good news of what God did and is doing in this world as we understand it through the life and death and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. We have story, and we have song, and we have one another. The angel of 1954 did a good job. She did a good job. And she's now grown into the angel of 2019, and she's beautiful. And it's our joyful calling to love that angel and befriend the soul in this place in the name of our wondrous God. The future will be, as it always has been, open and waiting for our faithful response. May God bless you as you think about these thoughts.